This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere you go. Anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go. We start with baseball, get into a little NBA, and of course, Knobservations. And Canty, you can win your first week of bedtime later on in this hour as well.
I'm not sure if you're trying to be encouraging or you're trying to slight me by saying it'll be the first time that I actually won the week.
It was neither. I was just really just giving you a solid factual statement. You can cut the deficit to 2-1 and win your first week of what time did Rick go to bed.
Yeah, it just feels like in a roundabout way you're giving me a backhanded compliment.
It wasn't meant to be. I'll let you know if that's the intent.
I would much rather a backhanded compliment. I would stay away from the palm of Dave Rothenberg.
I have beautiful soft hands.
The backhand is better than the forehand.
Much, much better.
Beautiful safer. Soft hands.
Much safer. As far as I'm concerned, Chris already won. I mean, he won CMT today. Dominated.
What do you mean dominated?
He had a great CMT. That was, I mean,
he was terrific. In many of the decisions, we were lockstep.
Yeah, but it's about the performance too. It's not just the decision.
Just he had energy and all that. I agree.
The passion, the emotion.
I agree.
I mean, you know what's amazing?
He was terrific.
We do all these sports ones. You do a fast food edition, and the amount of feedback is through the roof. I'm getting text messages from everyone on the station. I got Don LaGreca. If sex was a hamburger, it'd be the Whopper.
so he agrees with me.
He agrees with you, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, love the Whopper.
Wow.
Carl agreed with me, trashing Burger King. He said I should sleep well this afternoon.
when you go to bed for the night at 5:30, you should sleep really, really well. That's funny. All right, so we've talked about this for such a long time in baseball, that there's just no trust between the owners and the players, and we've said it, and the K-Show said it, and Barton Hahn, and really everyone on the station has said it. There's a little more validity when you hear it from Derek Jeter. So here he is, courtesy of the line drive. No trust at all between owners and players.
It was disappointing. It was embarrassing at times, the back and forth. But there's a lot of trust that needs to be, there is no trust, I should say, is the best way to put it. And hopefully things will change moving forward. But it was pretty sad to see the back and forth being played out publicly in a time like now. And we have so many people filing for unemployment throughout the country, over 30 million people, 40 million people with no jobs. And they really don't want to hear owners and players going back and forth about how much money they deserve and how much money they need. And I get it. Look, I was a player. And I feel as though players should fight for everything that they feel as though they should have. And I'll always support them in that sense. But in this particular case, I think some things should have been done behind the scenes.
Rick, I agree with almost everything he said. The one thing I disagree is that it'll be better going forward. I don't know that the owners and players ever have a easy situation between these two groups. I don't think it ever gets better.
It feels like it's only going to get worse.
Right?
With how this, yeah, I mean, that's
because it ended so awfully last week.
Yeah, I mean, it ended as bad as it could have possibly have ended. And then you had Rob Manfred talking about how it was always going to be 60 games. And you've seen, the outrage this morning, which I don't really necessarily know if I agree with. I think when he says it was always going to be 60 games, I think that was more to what we've been saying. They had a certain amount of money they wanted to spend. So if you wanted fully prorated contracts, the most we would go was 60 games.
But help me out here, Rick. What was there to be gained by coming out and saying this now?
Who, Jeter?
I don't know. Listen, I don't know except...
I'm talking about Rob Manfred.
Uh-huh.
I'm talking about Rob Manfred. Because it kind of felt like he was hanging on the rim a little bit. And I don't understand why you would do that. The focus should be about the players reporting for summer training and getting ready for the season that's going to kick off in 3 weeks.
I think he was speaking to the people that were complaining, why wasn't this done sooner? Why are you only playing 60 games? I don't think he worded it well either.
Exactly. That's my problem. I guess that's my bigger problem.
Because a lot of the reaction was, well, I mean, if it was always going to be 60 games, how is this negotiating in good faith? And I think he would argue, we made offers. You guys could have played more games, but we couldn't pay you full prorated salaries.
Right.
So if you wanted more games, you would have to compromise on how much you were going to get paid. Because it was always the same number. It was always right around the same number.
But why would you, if you're the players, play 80 games or 90 games for the same money you're going to get for 60 games?
You wouldn't, to his point. So don't complain about it. If you don't want to take... The whole point of that March 26th email was the ambiguity became, if the owners feel like it's not financially feasible to play without fans in seats, there would be a renegotiation. And for them, the number with no fans in seats was going to be right around that $1.5 billion, which was 60 games fully prorated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how many they wanted to play. If the players wanted to play more and you're complaining about the, you know, we want more games, there were offers out there that they could have accepted. So it wasn't in all reality, it wasn't really a negotiation. It was Major League Baseball the entire time trying to get the players to accept less, knowing that they wouldn't. And then maybe as they were doing that, squeeze some other stuff out of them, like expanded playoffs and, you know, players being mic'd up and stuff like that.
And that's all fine, Rick. I guess to your point, they were never going to go beyond 60 games fully prorated. That may be the case. That's fine. I just don't understand why the commissioner of the sport feels like he needs to respond to people continuing to question why did the negotiations take so long. Like, this is one of those examples of being too transparent. You don't have to let everybody behind the curtain and tell them exactly what you were thinking. Because I don't think this does anything to improve the relationship that you have with Tony Clark and the MLBPA.
Yeah, which isn't good to begin with.
Exactly. So why are you going to continue to make it more contentious, to make it more adversarial? I think Derek Jeter is absolutely right in what he's saying. Like, moving forward for what's in the best interest of baseball, the relationship between the players and the owners has to get better. I mean, we criticized Roger Goodell and DeMarie Smith for the same thing years back because it was so contentious when those two took over for Paul Tagliabue and Gene Upshaw. They weren't able to do anything together. They weren't able to agree on anything publicly, and that didn't make sense. That didn't put football in a better place. The relationship between the players and the owners needs to look more like what we see with hockey or more like what we see with basketball, what Gary Bettman and Don Fear are trying to work out with not only handling this summer – but also negotiating for a CBA extension. Or like what we're seeing with Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts. That's the relationship that you want between the commissioner and the head of the players' union. But you don't have that with baseball. Instead, you got this ugly, drawn-out back and forth over the course of the last 2 months where the players think they came to an agreement and the owners are saying that they're not. They're arguing about money in the middle of a pandemic when 30 or 40 million people are unemployed. It's ridiculous.
It's a terrible look. I mean, I think we all realize it's a terrible look. I mean, he's probably just better off just not even mentioning it. Just talk about we're moving forward. We got the 60 games, and here's what to look forward to. But
nothing good is going to come from walking through where we were for the last 3 months with baseball.
Yeah, but again, I mean, here's the thing, though. I mean, what is the job of a commissioner? I mean, who signs his checks?
But he already won.
That's my point. He already got it. He already got what he was looking
for.
He got exactly what
they wanted. 60 games. They'll get their full prorated pay.
Timeout. They didn't get exactly what they wanted because they want expanded playoffs and everything else. Remember, the whole criticism of this negotiation was they were being too nearsighted. They needed to realize that this can't be, you know, we're going to posture because we're worried about the next CBA negotiation. And that's what they did the entire time. We're not going to give ground because we don't want to look weak headed into the next CBA negotiation. The owners right now sense weakness from the baseball union. And they know that, so they're looking to take advantage of it now. They're going to capitalize on it. I think Tony Clark might be in trouble, to be honest.
I agree with you.
If when they file this grievance, they don't win, I would have a lot of questions.
You think they're going
to
win?
But we won't really know whether or not they won before they are supposed to iron out the new CBA, will they? Because they said it's going to take over a year.
Well, the new CBA is not going to be negotiated till what? Till the end of it runs out what?
End of next year?
Yes.
They're going to start the end of next year?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the last thing you want to do is replace the head of the union as you just initiated talks on the CBA, though.
Probably not, but I mean, after how you did in 2016 and now how Tony Clark handled this, I wouldn't have a ton of confidence.
No.
That's true.
The players are in for it. But the players
it doesn't seem like Rob Manfred has much. Do you get the feeling that Rob Manfred has much respect for Tony Clark?
No, and
no.
I think he'll run circles around him.
That's what Buster said. I mean, Buster said it's not even a fair fight when they sit in a room together.
How much more
qualified Manfred is.
I just don't understand why Rob Manfred felt the need to respond to everybody.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Why everything took so long. That shouldn't be what
you already
won.
Outside of expanded playoffs, you pretty much got everything you wanted. You got the 60 games. And let it go. Be done with it. You don't need to take a victory lap.
No, exactly. If you're the commissioner of the sport with guys reporting to their team's facilities, the focus should be on guys getting ready to play the season, which starts in 3 weeks, and being excited that we have baseball this summer.
Exactly. It's back. Guys are reported. Guys reported yesterday.
That's what I'm saying, Dave. You're going to be the first live team sport back. Yeah, I mean, after all of this stuff that's gone on, the NHL and the NBA have already agreed to coming back weeks before you ever able to come to some kind of resolution. You're still going to be the first sport back.
Yep.
Celebrate that. Look at that by as a full win. Week. Talk about that.
By a full
week.
You
got women's soccer back. Stop. Don't be disrespectful to
We're not trying to be disrespectful. All right. So speaking of baseball coming back, Aaron Boone addressed the media yesterday. A couple of cuts we should hear from the Yankees skipper. Is it likely you start with a six-man rotation? Here's Aaron Boone.
I wouldn't say it's likely. Just kind of depends. We'll see where we are as guys are building up and what they're able to withstand and handle, and are they being built up properly or to a level that, you know, once the regular season starts, they're ready to go. Whether that's a five-man, whether that's a four-man, you know, we'll be as creative as we have to be.
Well, you got to get in, and you got to get off to a good start. So I think you might adjust as you see how the season's going along if you're Boone and the Yankees, or any team really.
That's going to be the key, isn't it, though? I mean, because you have – I mean, when we had Marley on, I mean, it was like what I give you for an answer at 10:48 could be different than what I give you for an answer at 10:48.
I mean,
tomorrow,
in a perfect world, they'd like to go with maybe even a six-man rotation. If you're 5-11, well, maybe you go to a five-man rotation. Maybe you go back to a four-man rotation. Like, it's going to adjust based on how your season is going, I would think.
Well, it's too. I mean, it's plus he hasn't even. I mean, they've been keeping track, you know, making phone calls and Zoom calls and everything else. But he hasn't seen these guys yet. What kind of shape they're in to really appropriately answer that question? You have to be agile on the fly. So if this guy's not stretched out, then we have to, you know, make this decision. Or if he looks like he's, you know, we got to try to protect him. We want to err on the side of caution. Then maybe we skip him. It's just. I mean, that's. I'm telling you, this is going to be a year where the managers of these teams are going to be really, really important with the decisions they have to make.
Yeah, it can't just be by the numbers. You have to have a feel for the players and how they're responding to the stress that they're going to be under with managing COVID, but also managing their conditioning and managing their recovery. Like, even when he was asked about Aaron Judge or Aaron Hicks, I mean, Boone said it, you know, we have, you know, a good idea of where these guys are at, but the big test will be how these guys bounce back from day to day. Like, seeing how their bodies respond. And you have to be aware of that as a manager, because inevitably you're going to have to deal with guys having injuries and guys being unavailable because of the virus. That's going to happen. But it's the manager that has a good feel for that, has a good pulse on where his team is at, what they need, that's going to have a distinct advantage in dealing with this. Because this is a sprint, man. You're talking about playing 60 games in 66 days.
Every game is a series.
I think
that's the phrase of the season. More from Aaron Boone. Will there be more rest given to certain players this season?
We're going to try and make evaluations on an individual basis about where we think guys are physically. And if we feel like they're ready after this three-week stretch to go and do their normal workload and play every day, you know, so be it. But we also know that and trust in our depth. And if you look at our team and if we're fortunate enough to be healthy at the end of this camp, you know, we feel like we have a lot of players that are capable of being everyday players that won't necessarily be that. And we'll lean on those guys, especially in the early days, to make sure we're building guys up properly.
I feel like there's so much unknown, Rick. Like, we have no idea what we're going to be able to do in 3 weeks.
No, I mean, look how far we've come since, I mean, what was it? Camp Champ tested positive on June 23rd. He's on the PGA Tour. And we went from, you know, earlier on when they first started back up with the PGA Tour, you test positive, you know, at minimum you're missing 10 days to 2 weeks until you get your next test. And if you're negative, you can rejoin the tour. Now it's, you know, two tests, minimum 24 hours apart that are negative, and you can come back. So you're not missing, you know, you're not guaranteed to miss 2 weeks. So who knows what it's going to look like? But again, you're going to have to worry about, you know, a guy showing up that, you know, you have penciled in and, you know, he tests positive. So now what do you do?
Do you think we see more injuries this year than a normal baseball season?
I think that's partly what he was talking about. I mean, you know, you're going to ramp these guys up for the next couple of weeks, try to get them as good a shape as possible, and then you put them into live action. To Chris's point, how they bounce back. Now, would you be surprised to see more soft tissue injuries?
No. I think you will, actually.
So this is where depth becomes a huge issue, and the Yankees have tons of depth.
And I thought it was interesting when Boone was asked about Davey Garcia and Clark Schmidt, like, where are those guys stand, and do you expect them to contribute? You know, he said that they did impress in a couple of weeks that they had with spring training, and they're going to be in the mix when they report this weekend. And, I mean, I think, your depth has got to be included as a big part of this equation when you're trying to figure out the best way to position your team to compete for a championship. I mean, you have to have guys that you can rely on, guys that you trust, in the event that you're going to be missing some guys, because it's inevitable that somebody on the team is going to be infected with the virus, right? Can we agree on that?
Absolutely.
Or just go down with a normal injury. So you're going to have to lean on some guys that you didn't think were going to have to play key roles when you started the season. That's going to happen. So the teams that have quality depth that's ready to go when they're called upon, those are the teams that are going to have an advantage. And you would think that that's something that bodes well for the Yankees.
You've already seen it. I mean, what they were able to do last year was incredible. So you have that in your back pocket.
Yeah.
It's just going to be one of those situations, and Chris, you know this. It doesn't matter how much work you do during the offseason, how many months it is or whatever it is, how many, you know, exercises you do.
Playing your sport. It's nothing like live competition. Nothing
especially
like
when it's live. You can't ramp up the kind of intensity that you're going to face on a game day.
You can't simulate it. But I do like the fact that Aaron Boone said that they're going to try. Like, they're going to put an emphasis on live reps, pitchers and hitters, live defensive reps. Like, all of those things, I think those things matter in terms of not only getting your guys ready to go, but being able to evaluate and understand how the different parts work together.
I mean, it's good in theory to say, you know, everyone's going to be available. Judge will be back. He should be healthy. Aaron Hicks is going to be healthy. Aaron Hicks has come back from Tommy John. Like, how long does – I mean, I can imagine, you know, playing three straight days or whatever it is, his arm starts barking. You're going to have to shut him down for a couple days.
Right. I mean, Aaron Judge just started hitting off a tee.
Yeah, and I was listening to Kay yesterday, and someone called in and asked the question, you know, do you maybe, because it's only 60 games, he's coming back from the fractured rib, do you kind of try to protect him? And Kay said, no, you can't baby him. And I think I disagree with that. I get swinging a baseball bat isn't the best for a cracked rib, but if I had the choice of swinging the bat and also playing right field, I would probably just have him swinging the bat to try to keep him as healthy as possible.
Yeah, because there's less chances at injury, right?
Yeah, and I think you only have
more.
The chances.
And the player has a little more control in the batter's box than he does out in the field.
Exactly. Listen, I understand what you're saying. I don't think you're wrong, but I mean, you have to look at a couple things. First of all, it clogs your DH up. Second of all, he's an elite defensive right fielder, and it takes that out of the equation as well.
Yeah, but again, you say that. When he's 100% healthy and not dealing with trying to protect himself, he is a gold glove caliber right fielder. But if you're going to tell him, hey, Aaron, do us a favor, because Giancarlo can't play the outfield, we need him to DH, just take it easy in right field.
You can't just take it easy in right field.
Yeah. No, you can't. He's not going to.
And you could even tell him that, have the discussion, and ball goes out to him, and he's got to dive for it. You think he's just going to be like, well, coach told me take it easy?
No, those instincts are going to kick in, man. Exactly. The player's going to react when he's in the game.
That's not who he is, too. That goes against everything that he stands for, is to go out there and try to protect himself. He didn't tell it. No one had any idea he had a partially collapsed lung either when it happened. This isn't like, we're not talking about Robinson Cano, who's going to, I mean, you could tell him, hey, you know what, just take it easy on the first base. And he's like, nope, no problem.
Yeah, I do anyway.
I'm just envisioning it, Rick, now that you're talking about it. Like Aaron Judge chasing a fly ball at the wall in right field. It feels like it's a disaster waiting to happen. You know what I'm saying? Especially with 100%. The injury that he's dealing with.
100%. I don't think it's babying him. It's just, it's being realistic. Like this guy, knowing your players, like how this guy plays. Like he's going to
hopefully these are discussions in 3 weeks that we have. Why is Boone not, you know, not putting this guy in the lineup?
You got to get through the next couple weeks.
Yeah, they're big, as Marley told us earlier. All right, tonight, 8 o'clock, ESPN TV, top-ranked boxing, former two-weight world champion Jose Pedraza battles southpaw contender Mikel LePierre in the junior welterweight division. That's tonight, 8 o'clock on ESPN TV. A lot of pressure on what should be a, hopefully I can keep things alive here with this this bedtime. I got to give you accurate weather. I got a lot going on here. So let's start it out. Friday edition on a Thursday of Nomservations.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber.
you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, here we go, fellas. It is a Thursday, but this is a Friday edition of Knobservations, and as we always like to do, to start off Knobservations, we're going to get a live look at the weather with the sexy David Roth.
The weather outside is weather.
No, Rick. All right. It's a beauty today. Warm, toasty, sunny. You got to make sure to put the sunblock on. And let me just jump ahead quickly, because we're not going to be doing this for a couple days. Friday, tomorrow you're going to get some rain, some thunder showers, so be careful. Saturday looks really nice, and Sunday looks beautiful as well. So that's looking ahead. But today, I mean, it's gorgeous. It is absolutely gorgeous. You're going to have a sun-drenched afternoon. It's nice and warm. You're going to get a high of close to 90. You're going to have beautiful sun well up until sunset at 8:31. Slim chance of rain. We're sitting at 10% humidity. Nice area at 50%, that is. Wind northwest, 8 miles an hour. Feels like 88. You know why? Because it is, in fact, 88. Precipitation. Odds are you're not going to get any really, really small chance of that, according to my Doppler pressure, barometric pressure, 29.83. Visibility, you can see for miles and miles, 10 miles. In fact, UV index, be careful. Sunblock, UV index is at a 9. Air quality index is 24. And as we learned earlier this week, anything from 0 to 50 is good for air quality, and that falls right within that range.
Well done, David.
Phenomenal
well
job. Phenomenal done. Job, Dave.
Thank you.
Phenomenal.
Unbelievable. It's my fast food, is what it is.
Between Canty CMT, your weather report.
Yeah,
I almost don't want to have tomorrow off. I mean, the way this thing is just clicking on all cylinders.
You can do the show
right
if you'd like.
No, that's okay. Okay. All right, here we go. Game show that is sweeping the nation. Dave Rothenberg could suffer his first loss at the hands of Christopher Canty. Canty is up 2-1 headed into this Thursday, the final day, because they don't want to play on Friday. So, Canty, you control the board.
I am going to give one Dave Rothenberg the honors, Rick.
All right. So, I'm up 2 weeks to none. If I can salvage today, it continues to none heading into next week. 7:58, final answer.
7:58. Canty, it's on you.
That's a good one, Dave. That's the number that I had in mind exactly. Yes. But you know what? With all of the things, the shenanigans, going to the grocery store, getting home a little bit late, I'm going to say that he went to bed a little bit later than he anticipated, so I'm going to go with 7:59.
7:59. We got a drum roll, Santiago. Drum roll.
Oh, God.
Canty, I hate to do this. You've been great today. Last night was a 7:43 bedtime.
Oh.
Yes. Oh, I salvaged the week. Oh, the pressure I was under.
I was a wreck last night.
Yeah,
I had nothing left to give.
Yeah,
but when you spend 5 hours at the grocery store, he's got to go to bed.
Yeah, but I just felt like with all the time that he spent on the grocery store, they got to get the groceries in the house, get everything unpacked.
I got to tell you, Chris, when you came up with that as your rationale, I was like, I'm screwed here. It was brilliant. I should have gone later.
I felt like he led me down the wrong road. The context clues that he gave throughout the show led me to a later bedtime. I feel like this was a bait and switch by Rick.
No. Here's the thing, though.
Yeah, it is. You want to?
No.
Yeah, it is.
Canty, game
you
day.
You don't want me to win. You don't want
time
me
out.
To win.
I want you to win. Dave, I mean, Dave is a very poor winner. He's a sore loser and an even worse winner. He just gloats. What happened was Cass saw that I just had nothing left in the tank. And she's like, I think we need to shut this thing down early. You've been pushing it. Let's go tuck this thing in.
Okay.
Earlier than I expected, I'll be honest. I thought it was going to take me some time, but nah, there was nothing left in the tank.
That's
nothing.
Right.
Gotcha.
So this week, null and void. We pick up Monday, 2-0.
Well done, Dave Rothenberg, because 7:58 was the exact time that I had in my mind.
All right. Thank you.
Look at you guys on the same page. I love it. Let's start off with some good news. I just want to say a quick congratulations to Maya Moore and Jonathan Irons.
Yeah. What an amazing thing for her, huh, to do?
For her, I mean, you're talking about
career on pause.
I know.
And by the way, have you guys taken a quick peek, you know, just for the sake of doing it, at how good Maya Moore is at basketball? How successful she's been at basketball?
Yeah, she's one of the great players in the history of the game, you could argue.
After the 2017 season, her win-loss record in the U.S. since high school was 497-78.
That's insane.
It's unbelievable.
But as great as she is at basketball, which is we've known is evident, I mean, she might be a better person.
Yeah, you saw how she reacted. I mean, she would probably tell you that as far as wins, and she's won tons of championships, this
might
be her
biggest win.
Her greatest win.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, can we lock her away for the Arthur Ashe Courage Award next year?
Dude, I mean, it's a lot of people talk about it, but the fact that she actually did it is incredible. Incredible. I mean, you're talking about a guy who spent 22 years in jail.
Yeah, and she stopped playing her she stopped her career.
Yeah. 31 years old. Took last year off, was going to take this year off until he was released.
So not only did she stop playing, but then she succeeded in her goal.
Yeah, but what's a shame, Dave, is that she should be put in a position where she feels like she has to stop her career in order to get justice.
I mean, you're 100% right.
That's the problem. And we got to get to a point in this country where that's no longer the reality. And it's going to take all of us in order to do it.
I mean, she may go down as one of the, I mean, just forget just, you know, female basketball player. She's going to be up there as one of the most successful basketball players, period, in the history of the sport with what she's accomplished.
It takes a lot of courage to do what she did.
Well, she deserves all the...
And being selfless.
All the praise that she gets.
Yes. She deserves
it. Awesome, not enough for her.
You know what's awesome? How many athletes have you grown up, like, idolizing? And then even guys you watch playing and you get a chance to play with them and you're like, oh, I hope they're great guys. And then you meet them and you're like, eh, kind of disappointed. You're talking about a Hall of Fame basketball player that, uh-huh. I mean... is a Hall of Fame person.
Yeah. That's who you want your kids to look up to, I'll tell you that.
That's a testament to her, man.
Yeah,
good right? for her. Good for him.
Can I just interrupt real quickly?
Yeah.
Some good news. John Heyman reporting MLB expected to announce the regular season schedule next week. The Players Union has signed off on it. Teams making a final few request suggestions, and that'll be announced next week. So there we go.
Nice. All right, boys, here we go. Did this happen in Florida? You guys ready for this?
Oh, we're ready.
On Monday, changes were made as part of an order that allowed strip clubs and other entertainment spots to reopen as long as the county approved of their coronavirus operating plans. The apparent changes included language that required dancers and customers to maintain 10 feet of distance during performances. Little did you realize, though, that this did not include lap dances. Lap dances are still very legal. Deputy Mayor says... The plans all say that performances will take place 10 feet from the tables or seats. The lap dance, however, is not considered a performance.
Oh, come on.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, come on. You wonder why we're in such trouble?
Yes. Yeah, yes,
I mean,
Dave,
you wonder why we're in such trouble?
Because
you're finding loopholes in the rules of social distance?
That's the deputy mayor that said that, though. The deputy mayor said, you know what, we're not going to consider lap dance is not a performance. So you guys can just do whatever you want. No social distancing.
Wait, but this is the exact reason why it's spiking out of control.
No, the next story is one of the exact reasons.
Oh, God. So what do you want to know? Is that Florida?
Is that Florida, yeah. Think about the minds you get into a room. And you trust these people. Like, these guys, you know what? They're qualified. They're going to make the right decisions.
Yeah. They got my best interest at heart. I'm going to say that's Florida.
Ooh, look at you, Florida.
Yeah, because I think most strip clubs are Northeast are closed. I mean, listen, it could certainly be in Arizona, or Texas. It's one of those three. I'll say Florida, though, yeah.
I don't think it's Florida. With what they're going through right now, I don't think that's Florida.
Ray Santiago. This is right up your alley.
Excuse me? I'm all in on Florida at this point. Just all in.
All in on Florida is correct. Canty is wrong. That is actually Miami. That is Miami strip clubs.
And I was going to say Miami, too.
And you wonder.
No. Do you wonder? I mean, do you really wonder at this point?
No, but honestly, I give up. I give up.
You know, if you think that was bad, this is even worse. We mentioned this earlier in the show. We'll bring it back because this is the definition of being a knob. This is Alabama.
Oh, God. Can I put my headphones down? I can't.
Yeah, young people in Alabama are throwing COVID-19 parties. It's a disturbing competition where people who have coronavirus attend and the first person to get infected receives a payout. The parties are being held in Tuscaloosa, and infected people are urged to attend so others can intentionally contract the virus. They thought this was a rumor at first, did some research, and realized that this is actually happening.
Well, I mean, what do you say to these people that are taking life and death and just turning it into a game and having fun for money? I mean, what can you even say?
I don't know. Is there? I mean, what do you say to somebody like that? That they'll listen to? When the idea of the game is to catch it and then the first person confirmed by a doctor to have coronavirus wins the money made off the ticket sales.
I have no words, guys. I have no words. I'm disgusted, but am I surprised? I can't say that I am, man. I mean, when you got elected leaders not taking this thing seriously and putting out confusing information about how to deal with this or what's actually happening to the rest of the country right now in terms of the spread of this thing, I can understand why people are trivializing it and not taking it seriously. It's ridiculous, man.
To spit in the and tempt fate like that is just – it's one thing to not wear a mask, which bothers me to no end, but to have a party to attempt to contract it, how dumb can you be?
Just remind me quickly, when the country shut down, when the NBA shut down, what was Rudy Gobert doing?
Putting his hands all over stuff in the locker room.
Was he taking it serious? How many stories have I done where they're doing, you know, challenges where the people, you got the girl licking the toilet seat?
Yep, that happened too. In an airplane, right?
Yeah, this is craziness, man.
That happened.
It's craziness. And just to add to the craziness, I want to end here. Hear me out. I want to do one or two more observation stories so we can get to, I think we should quickly get to the Knicks stuff before.
Well, that was the plan, yeah.
Okay, here we go. This is going to make it even crazier. Guess who's holding a concert?
Oh, I saw this.
Down in Texas.
I saw this. Vanilla Ice.
Oh, yeah. 4th of July weekend concert. Deep in the heart of Texas.
Did you see what he said?
Yeah, I saw what he said.
Something to the... Well, if you have the quote, you can read it, but something to the effect of coronavirus didn't exist in the 90s or something?
Yeah, he said, I can't wait to get back to this.
Yeah.
He said, the 90s were the best. We didn't have coronavirus or cell phones or computers. We had 5.0s, Blockbuster, Beavis and Butthead, Wayne's World, Chris Tucker, and Jackie Chan. Mortal Kombat is still better than Fortnite. The last of the great decades. Music makes people happy, Dave.
Oh, stop it.
And I think we could all use some happiness.
We could. With all this corona mess happening. Put on a concert online and let people have access for free.
What's wrong with that, Dave? What is wrong with that?
I mean, this stuff gets me so upset, I can't even tell you.
2,500 tickets being sold,
oh,
which is roughly half of the venue's potential capacity.
And is it? I mean, Texas is a hotbed right now.
You also have Color Me Bad. That's going to
Good. Great.
Same venue on July 4th. Yeah. In Texas.
No, Taylor Dane will be down there, too.
Where all the bars in Texas were told to reclose due to the large surge of COVID-19.
You're allowed to have a concert.
I just don't understand why people don't realize the more that they do stuff like this, the longer you delay everybody else to getting back to some sense of normalcy.
Is it that they don't care or they don't understand?
Well, this is another loophole. The place they're doing it at is technically a restaurant.
And you're allowed to have 2,500 people in a restaurant now?
Outdoor. It's an outdoor space.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Loophole. This will put you in a good mood, though, Dave.
Okay,
last story.
Give me something.
Make you happy. It's a medical first. Surgeons in the United Kingdom have successfully completed a penis reattachment nearly 24 hours after the man cut his own you-know-what off during a psychotic episode. That's some good news.
Didn't they do that with what's the guy that his wife cut it off, right?
Bobbitt? Oh, Bobbitt?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think it was 24. I think they actually found it before the 24 hours. It's the first time when you had a full day without it.
I can't imagine I can't imagine it's ever the same.
You wouldn't think
she
so.
She threw it out the window.
Yeah,
she's driving around to search for it. Yeah, she just threw it right out the window. Oh, what's this? Just throw that out.
Yeah.
It's garbage.
Yeah, this is done.
Yeah.
Oh,
man.
God.
There you go. That is today's observations.
All right. There's an observations. We'll come back and get into the Knicks coaching search. They can't do what is being reported, right? No, they can't. We'll get to the Knicks in a moment. The NBA and NBAPA announced COVID-19 test results. Not awful. In tests conducted of 344 NBA players between June 24th and 29th, an additional 9 players have tested positive for the coronavirus. 25 of the 351 players have tested positive since testing began on June 23rd. In tests conducted of 884 team staff between the 23rd and 29th, 10 tested positive for the coronavirus. Any player, coach, or team staff member who tested positive will remain in self-isolation until they satisfy public health protocols for discontinuing isolation and have been cleared by a physician. So, again, I think at this point where the positive tests are scary, but as long as no one gets terribly, terribly ill and you're the NBA or any of these sports, you just move forward.
Yeah, I think that's the plan. And if God forbid, I mean, I know you guys have seen the story about the Chicago Cubs pitching coach.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, how badly he had it. And you're talking of a guy who's, I mean, in great shape,
mm-hmm.
38 years old, no underlying health issues. And, I mean, he struggled.
Those are the terrifying stories.
This it would take something like this to happen, and I don't care what the sport is, for the players to go, okay, you know, maybe this isn't a risk that I want to take.
Yeah, it would have to be something like that, Rick. But, I mean, the NBA has a ton invested in this restart. I want to say it's costing them $150 million
in order to put this production
in Orlando on. So, I mean, they're invested in it. They're going to try to give themselves every opportunity to start and finish this ramp up. So, I mean, we'll just have to wait and see. But in terms of the protocols that they're trying to put in place, it seems like it's a common sense approach that makes a lot of sense. We'll just see if they're able to execute it.
All right, fingers crossed all around. Stephen A was on.
Dave, let me ask you a quick question, though, before we get to the sound. Would you be more concerned with the bubble? And I'm hearing people going back, like sneaking out. Would you be more concerned with someone trying to sneak out of the bubble or trying to sneak someone into the bubble?
I don't know. I'd be concerned with both.
I would think I'd be more concerned with them trying to sneak somebody into the bubble.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that would be the bigger concern.
Yeah, but if you sneak out and then you're with regular population, then you sneak back in? I don't know. I mean, both are awful. You can't do it. If you're a player and you want to have a chance to play the season, you have to be a big boy and just grow up and say, you know what? I got 3 months of being uncomfortable here.
Yeah, it has to be full collaboration. I mean, this has to be all hands on deck. Like, all the players have to buy into this. It's not going to work. But that's what makes, you know, this story, 38-year-old guy who's in great shape.
Yes, it does.
That would make it as, I know the leagues want to get through it, but I would imagine that when the players would sit down and go, guys, I don't know if this is worth it. Like,
They're probably right, because it only takes one. All right, Stephen A. was on Bart and Hahn yesterday talking about the Knicks head coaching search. Here he is on Knicks head coach, and he mentions one of the best, Doc Rivers.
I've been on a record religiously talking about Mark Jackson. Now, obviously, I'll shove that aside. If you had an opportunity, like, for example, I've been told that it's entirely possible that Mike Miller might be kept for another year, and then after that, you go and you get Doc Rivers away from the Clippers. You know, so who knows whether or not that's going to happen.
So here's my thing. If I could get Doc Rivers, great. I'm going to hold up my coaching search, keep Mike Miller in the hopes that the Clippers move on from Doc Rivers. That's the most Knicksiest thing to ever do. I would never consider doing that, Chris.
Yeah, but if you're Doc Rivers, would you ever consider coming to the New York Knicks? With what you got set up in L.A. with the Clippers,
Why would he leave?
He signed a contract extension in 2019, and he's on the record saying the only way that he's leaving is if Steve Ballmer tells him to get out. This is before Kawhi Leonard. This is before Paul George.
You got Kawhi. You got Paul George. They're building a new arena, and you have the richest owner in sports. I mean, unless you're trying to use the Knicks to get a better deal from the Clippers, why would he leave?
But why?
He just got a deal from the Clippers, though. He literally just got another deal.
Why would you fall for this if you're the Knicks? Even if he says, I'm interested, you're now going to put your franchise on hold for a full year in the hopes that maybe Doc Rivers will entertain coming to you?
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I mean, no, I wouldn't do it.
Oh, come on.
I can't imagine that he'd come to the Knicks anyway, but no.
Exactly. That's where it starts. He's not going to come there. So why are you going to base your plans on what you're going to do with the organization in the next couple of years on pie in the sky?
But see, it's
a terrible strategy.
But it always goes back to, they're always looking for the sexiest name. Like, find a coach that you feel like is the most qualified.
And hire him, and that's it.
To develop young players and build a foundation and then hire him and let him do his job.
Here's the thing,
get out of the way.
You're absolutely right. That should be the approach. Now, I will say this about Doc Rivers. He's a champion. He's competent at what he does. I have no doubt that Doc Rivers would be capable of building an infrastructure where this team could have sustained success. But Doc Rivers is not an option. Like, that's not real. So why would that even factor into the equation when you're going through this coaching search?
You can't. If they do this, then you know what? then they deserve all the problems that come their way.
Completely agree with you, Dave.
Because if you're not learning from any of the mistakes you've made for the last God knows how long, there's really good coaches available right now. You're going to have a pipe dream of Doc Rivers 2 years down the road?
That look like they want to take the job, though. And you can start the process now as opposed to wait a year.
You're absolutely right, Rick. You're burning another season without building an identity, without the organization developing, you know, toward a clear, having a clear idea of who you are. Like, I just don't understand why you would waste the 2020-2021 season with letting Mike Miller hang on as the interim coach for another year until you can find somebody that's better.
It would be nothing short of ridiculous.
Because they want the easy button. They want to press the easy button.
There is no easy button.
Exactly right.
It does not exist.
And until you realize that, you're going to keep going, making these stupid mistakes. And you're going to hear, Jason Kidd will bring in Giannis. Stop. Stop.
Yes. The smartest hire now. Right now. Make it.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.